This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Last week, Governor Walker proposed a plan that would submit recipients of welfare programs like Medicaid and food stamps to drug testing. It's the latest in a series of reforms that he and other politicians have worked to implement on programs designed to assist people living in poverty. But a year-long series on poverty in Milwaukee found that the equation is even more complex than the issue of benefits and eligibility. Brendan O'Brien recently completed the series for the online Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. He told Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke what he got out of spending a year working on a single issue.
Yeah, it was great. I was allowed to go door to door and ask regular people on the streets and interview experts and really sink my teeth into an issue that has besieged our inner city for a very long time.
Did it surprise people when you approached them for them to hear what you were working on?
Yes and no. It surprised them that I was asking them about their finances at some points in time. But a lot of people were very willing to talk about their struggles, their financial struggles.
Do you think your appreciation for this issue, the full scope of poverty in Milwaukee, evolved in the time that you were covering this? Did you go into it kind of thinking it was one thing and finding out that it was something else?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I did a lot of thinking about this in the last month or so after wrapping up the series. And I think my biggest takeaway from the series is I learned a lot about the survival skills, the resiliency, the empowerment that people have for themselves in Milwaukee. Milwaukeeans are really ingenious when it comes to surviving. One of the best examples of this was a gentleman by the name of Shaky Jake that I met on Fond du Lac Avenue. Shaky Jake is an ex-felon, and he buys and sells household goods and bikes and microwaves along the roadway. These items he buys from rummage sales, or he finds them in trash bins, and he fixes them up and sells them. And that's his job, and that's how he makes his money.
This is not an easy way to eke out a living.
One of his helpers actually had a great quote for me. He said that there is always a better way than doing stuff that's illegal and breaking into houses and such. Shaky Jake and his helper Maine and a couple other guys talked about how this was their choice. This is what they did to survive. Do they really enjoy it? No, but this is their lot in life. And so they accepted it and moved on, and they made the best of it.
Well, the two of us talked a few months ago, probably about 6 months ago, actually, about the first part of the series. And I wanted to ask about a couple of the stories that came in the second half of it for you that stood out for me as I was reading it. And you write about Shaky Jake, but there was another kind of phenomenon that really struck me, and that was the number of people who are using electronic means, you know, Craigslist specifically, to find manual labor jobs. What are the kinds of things that they're doing, and who is finding them on Craigslist?
They are doing things such as manual labor jobs, odds and ends, landscaping jobs. I found a gentleman who helped unload trucks, moving trucks, when they arrived in the city. If you go to Craigslist, you can find an assortment of goods and services. And I guess what happens is that people also go there to find workers that will do odds and ends for them around their house or around their business. One gentleman by the name of Chris Nelson, he was living in a motel on the city's south side with his six children and his wife. They were kicked out of their house, and he would go on Craigslist every morning and find odd and end jobs to do. And one of the jobs he did was he picked up dog poop from a woman's yard for $20. Again, he said, and I think this harkens back to what I was talking about before. He said, does he enjoy it? No, but this is the way he survives. And he's going to accept it and be really good at it.
Did you get the sense that the people that are doing these kinds of things, are they doing them with an eye towards finding something better down the road, or are they really trapped in a cycle here?
They're trapped in this cycle. Most of them that I spoke with are trapped in this cycle of poverty, not earning enough and also living in neighborhoods that are besieged by poverty. There's a social isolation that goes on in our inner city that a lot of them and a lot of their families and their kids and their parents have gone through or are going through now. So, again, is there ways for them to combat it? Sure. Ways for them to make ends meet? Of course. But I think what I also found in doing the series is that our war on poverty and the programs that are out there are very limiting in terms of helping those that are in poverty.
You did talk to a lot of people who weighed in on the issue of where we are in the war on poverty. And first of all, did you find – is it still a war being waged in Milwaukee or is war at this point the wrong metaphor?
I think it's the wrong metaphor.
You write that, you know, it was 50 years ago that President Lyndon Johnson declared this war on poverty, but that was kind of an all-out assault at the time.
At the time it was. It was – also limited by the political realities of the time. He could only do so much. And I think a lot of what we're finding these days is that those limitations are catching up with us. For instance, I did a story about the Fair Housing Act. And while the Fair Housing Act has done a lot to address discrimination in rentals and mortgages in those markets, it's done very little to address zoning restrictions in suburbs that lead to segregation in the inner city that leads to the social isolation that I talked about.
Well, and so maybe this is an obvious question here, but why don't more people just move to the suburbs?
One of the examples I found, a woman tried to move to the suburbs, but it cost too much. She wasn't making enough money to afford the rent, so she made a choice to moved back after a few months living in the suburbs. And in doing so, she made a really tough choice to move back to a neighborhood that was dealing with a lot of violence. And but that's the only way she could make ends meet.
At the same time, you did talk to some experts that pointed out there have been some successes in the war on poverty, such as how senior citizens are doing.
Yes, there has been strides made in how senior citizens have been doing in the last 50 years. But on the flip side, children have been left out in a way. And a lot of these experts talk about the need for more early childhood educational programs and more looking at their health and well-being, especially at a very early age. We're talking 3, 4, 5 years old.
So you're right that even with the mixed amount of success that state-run programs have had, there are these people that are out there that are doing what they can as individuals to make a difference in the war on poverty.
Yes. One of them, his name is Steve Graybosch, and he is this middle-aged gentleman who quit a high-paying job, and now he has dreadlocks and a great spirit, and he gives out free beds every Thursday, free used beds every Thursday to whomever shows up at his front door of his warehouse. It harkens back to the idea of you don't necessarily need to solve the war or solve the poverty as a whole. Maybe just a look at it as one issue. And Graybosch said to himself years ago that, boy, there's a lot of people sleeping on the floor, and they wake up during the night and can't get a good night's sleep, and that affects how they are at work, and that affects how they are with their children.
Probably how the children are at school.
Exactly. Their health and well-being. And so he set out to solve this one very simple problem.
At the end of 12 months of reporting on this issue, do you feel more discouraged or more optimistic about your fellow Milwaukeeans' lot in life?
More discouraged because there's a lot of work to do. More optimistic because I know we can do it. There's a lot of great people in our communities that are doing the hard work that needs to be done to solve these problems. And I'm also optimistic because on the other end, there's a lot of hope. There's a lot of hope that from people that are living in poverty, and they're not giving up. And they're going to keep on working and keep on striving ahead. So I guess overall, I have a lot of hope for Milwaukee.
Brendan O'Brien, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brendan O'Brien is a reporter with the online Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. You can find a link to his year-long series on poverty in Milwaukee from WUWM.com. We'll take a quick break now, and then Kay Nolan joins us to talk about the legacy of Milwaukee's Mildred Fish Harnack. You are listening to Lake Effect from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio.